Welcome to IBBA Insights, providing expert advice on buying or selling small businesses. IBBA Insights is presented by the International Business Brokers Association, the world's largest nonprofit organization for those helping others sell or buy businesses. Now, here's your host, Chris Diglio.
On previous episodes, we talked about retirement and transitioning to a new owner. Today, we're going to look at the sale and transition of a business from a different point of view. What happens when you transition within the family, specifically from parents to children? I've helped facilitate these type of transactions many times over the past 20 years, and it can be extremely difficult. I know a little bit about working with family. I had the pleasure of working with my dad in several businesses during my lifetime. Growing up, he was an entrepreneur who bought and sold quite a few businesses. His last business was business brokerage. I worked with him in that until he retired after my mom passed away in 2012. When putting this show together, I originally planned to have business brokers who have been involved in these type of transactions where the business transferred from father or mother to son or daughter. I thought a more interesting perspective would be to have the actual people involved in the transaction talk to us about the experience. I know there are many business owners out there listening today who are looking to retire, and one of the options is to sell to their children. There are many questions involved. How do you do it? How is the deal structured? How will this affect the family dynamic? Can we do it ourselves, or is it better to get help? Can the parent truly step away from the business? Does the child really want to run the business? Where do you start? Today, we're going to talk with two people who went through this process in 2015 when Bob Goldstein sold his business, Mr. Checkout, to his son, Joel. Bob was a sales rep for a major cookie and cracker company in New England in the 80s. He recognized a void in convenience store retail, and after several trips to the major C-store trade shows in New York and Las Vegas, he left his job and began offering fast-turning checkout counter merchandise to C-stores. Within a decade, his company, Mr. Checkout, grew coast to coast working as a team to find best checkout products and suppliers. Joel Goldstein's the president of Mr. Checkout today, and he's recognized as the go-to person when trying to place a new product into retail. He's the author of Amazon's best-selling book, Start From Success, and host of RetailSummit.live. Focused on the retail sector, he's able to advise you where your product will be best received. He has contributed to Entrepreneur, Forbes, and Inc., and he is regularly used as a retail industry expert on Fox News. I first met Joel in 2009 when we were working on a charitable event at the Citrus Club in Orlando called Diamonds of Forever Casino Night Extravaganza, and we've been friends ever since. Bob and Joel, welcome to the show.
That's good to see you.
Good to talk to you.
I wouldn't call us friends. I'd say I just use you from time to time for your knowledge.
Well, I was going to say the same about you, so I guess we're even. Bob, you have a great son.
Yes, thank you.
Good, no problem. So I want to thank both of you for coming on today to share your experience with our audience. I worked with my dad for many years, and as the old saying goes, it was the best of times. And it was the worst of times. All kidding aside, working with my dad was probably the most rewarding experience of my life, even though I drove him crazy at times. You know, Bob, I'm sure you never had that experience with Joel, have you?
Not over the last hour or two.
Okay. Has it been that long?
Yeah. I'm angelic.
Yes. Right. Would you? Well, if it's anything like my family, my mother would tell you how great it was, and then my father would tell you the truth. So.
There you go.
Well, Bob, why don't you start by just giving the audience a brief history of Mr. Checkout?
Sure. Okay. Well, I think you covered most of it. It's I was working for a major cookie and cracker company and as a sales representative in New England. And one of my jobs that they gave me was to represent the convenience store industry to grow their product lines. And in doing so, my job was to go around mostly to independent mom and pop stores and the independent supermarkets and small chains and introduce the products. And as I was going around, especially to the independents, I noticed that there was a certain void in what we would now call checkout counter items. And that's where our name evolved from. And one day I was out in the parking lot by my car, and I see this guy pull up in a van. And all of a sudden, he's taking things out of his van, bringing them into the store, getting paid for it, coming back and forth. And over the past couple of months, I became friends with him. And he was bringing in things like Duracell batteries, Bic lighters, just convenience store items that you'd find at the checkout counter. And that's how it evolved. So he asked me, he said, well, if you'd like some of the items, I could, work with you on it. And I started, you know, selling actually out of the trunk of my car, checkout counter items.
While you were employed.
Yes, while I was employed. Right. And to find out that that was a no-no. So I was called into the office and they said, we understand that you might be selling other products other than, you know, your cookies and crackers. I don't know if I should say the name of the company. I'll leave that out. Okay. And I said, I am. And at the time I was making about three times more out of my trunk of my car than they were paying me. So we parted and that's how Mr. Checkout began.
But it wasn't originally called Mr. Checkout. What was the original name of the business? Terrell Distributors?
I had a few different names. Trendline
Associates. That was it.
Yeah, Trendline Associates was one of the first ones. Okay. And what I did was there were certain items that kind of took over. One of the big ones, I think it was in the 80s, was no-nonsense pantyhose. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Legs pantyhose was in all the stores, but not no-nonsense. And I noticed that the no-nonsense racks, they were always empty, just always wiped out because they weren't serviced by a service rep. They were serviced by a distributor who was also bringing in other products each week. Mm-hmm. And the demand just didn't keep up with that schedule. So I decided to just take on no-nonsense directly. I contacted Kaiser Roth, which was the major company at that time, and started buying indirect. And it just flourished from there. So the no-nonsense line basically just took over for the next three or four years, took over the business. At that point there, you know, I sold just that section of it, just the hosiery section. It grew into other products as well. There was toys.
Little drugstore.
Yeah, you know, all kinds of different things that would grow into it. And then one day I decided, hey, you know what? Let's just go whatever's in at the checkout counter, whatever's popular, that's what we're going to sell, rather than to segment it. And that's where we are today.
So, Bob, we learned about your humble beginning. So talk to us about at what point in time did you start thinking about maybe selling the business? And was it always intended for Joel to take over?
I think he was surprised it was in business that long.
I really was. you have to be, especially in the convenience store industry, you have to be aware of the trends.
Incredibly
bad
flexible.
There's fad, fashion, and style. Those are the three major waves that come along in retail. And the fads, they came and went sometimes weeks or months. You know, we had like slap bracelets.
Like the fidget spinners that just happened last year.
Every novelty you could think of. So, but certain items stuck and they kept selling day after day, month after month, and year after year. And those were Duracell batteries and Bic lighters and the little two-pack aspirins called Little Drugstore at the time.
Yep.
Yeah, and they were just became regular staple items that we could always depend on. And Joel, growing up with that, used to go with me to trade shows. He'd ride with me in the van when we would service accounts. And then we would start opening up other distributors, and they would actually be called sub-distributors. And that's how I got involved with the IBBA, actually. They would help us find these other distributors around the country. And we expanded to most major cities throughout the country over the next 10, 15 years.
That's very fascinating. Joel, I'd like to hear your perspective on this. You know, I know you purchased the business a few years ago back in 2015, but tell us about your history in the business. When did you first start working there? Did you leave and do other things before you took over?
Yeah, I was always kind of involved in business after business, growing up a terrible employee. And, you know, the biggest thing that I kind of contributed, I feel, is when Dad was growing the business, he was probably one of the first people online with a website. And he saw the opportunity there. And he built the original website, and then he needed help with coding here and there. And I think my neighbor in high school or middle school that was in my typing class was helping him with some kind of custom coding on the website. What was his name, Dad? Rodrigo?
Rodrigo, yeah.
Yep, Rodrigo. So Rodrigo was helping him out with the website. And I think Rodrigo fell off one year in college. And I kind of stepped in. So I think that's when I started working with the business. And it was really only on the marketing side. That's pretty much what it had become. You know, it had turned, after he kind of sold out all the territories, it really turned into an exclusive network of these independent distributors that nobody else had the access to. And Dad realized that it was one of the best ways for a new product to get on the store shelves, because nobody else would give these, you know, products without a track record a shot. You know, you can't go to Walmart or Target, get on the shelf. So you need a track record, and, you know, going through these independent distributors is one of the best ways that you can get into a lot of stores very fast and relatively easily. He started, you know, launching products through the business at that point. We really used the power of the internet as it emerged with the SEO, and that was intimately integral with AdWords and Google advertising. It was kind of a pastime hobby, but you know, our hobby is our business.
Sounds like he was a visionary, way ahead of his time.
Don't push it.
Okay, well, he doesn't want your head to get too big, Bob. I'm sorry, I'm trying here. Joel, was it always your dream to own a family business?
No, I always wanted to be involved, and I think, you know, as I got older, I realized that, you know, it's an incredible opportunity. I wasn't ready at the time that he was thinking about selling it or retiring to dive in. But, you know, as the saying goes, there's never a right time to do that. So, you know, my wife and I, we talked about it. We made the decision. You know, I dropped pretty much everything else. I focused 100% of my effort on this. And my goal was to make it the best business possible. So, you know, we pretty much revamped everything, and we took it from a yellow legal pad to a very intricate online community, and where we keep innovating today.
So let's go back to your younger years. So when you were younger, were you reluctant to work with your dad, or were you looking forward to it?
No. I never thought it was a thing, because he was never going to retire. Yeah, this is one of those things where he always did it from the kitchen table. I grew up listening to him on the phone. You know, he wasn't a distributor much past the 90s, right?
Well, I'll tell you, I have a picture. We were in the toy industry. We sold, you're familiar with Cumberland Farms, I'm sure, the chain?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we got a contract with Cumberland Farms to set up these J.Rue toy display racks in 1,200 stores. So I was still working out of the house, and we had these huge boxes that would come in. I had no place to put the boxes. So the whole basement was filled up with these big boxes that had these toy racks in them. And Joel would be down there with his sister, and they would be building forts and playing in these with all these boxes for, how long did you do that for, Joel? For
about
a year, couple
years,
right? He's still cutting out cardboard boxes. Because I worked out of the home mostly, the business was always around him.
Yeah.
So it just became a second nature thing, I think.
I was just laughing at your story, because when I was growing up, when I was a kid, probably about the same age you were mentioning it with Joel with the cardboard boxes, my dad was the largest beer distributor in the state of New York, the largest independent beer distributor. And we used to go to his warehouse, a massive warehouse with just pallets and pallets and pallets of soda and beer. And they could never find us, because we would climb like we were going down mountains. We would
there
just
you go,
climb.
Yeah.
So the childhood memories, they're great. So, you know, sometimes fathers and sons share the same vision. Sometimes they don't. I'd like to ask both of you, did you guys share the same vision for the company?
So technology changed our business more than anything. We went from a company that was operating, just a store-to-door delivery and setting up small rack jobbers, or sometimes they call them wagon jobbers, around the country, helping them. And we used the International Business Brokers Association to help us find these distributors. And it wasn't a business opportunity, it wasn't a franchise. But what we did was we helped them set up. We'd go out there and work with them, but they would buy directly from the major companies and pay us to help set their routes up. So that's how we got started. And then the internet, when it came along, changed everything. Okay. And Joel emerged into Mr. Checkout because of the internet, I needed help. I had no idea. I was just pushing buttons. I still am. But so Joel was able to help develop the website and take us to cyberspace, you know, and move the business from a store door type delivery business to one that helps match up distributors, wholesalers, and manufacturers.
So Joel, your dad supported your vision for the company. A lot of times, fathers and sons or parents and children working in the business, sometimes they don't quite share the same vision of the company and it become difficult. But it sounds like your dad saw the growth potential of the company or where it needed to go and supported you in the process.
Yeah, I didn't really change anything that he wasn't doing. You know, when I took over, it was pretty much the same business model. It was just he was running it off of a yellow legal pad, you know, and a whiteboard, and you know he kept track of his reps by phone, and there was no online portal or system of accountability or accounting software on the back end. So you know, I systemized it. I made everything process oriented, and I established accountability. And that didn't bode well for his previous team. You know, they didn't stick around very long. But you know, so we brought on a new team. We as I said, we systemized everything, and we really kind of took it into the 21st century.
So we have people listening to the show, and they're going through mm-hmm. the process, or they might be thinking about the process of transitioning from their ownership to their children. So when you guys were going through that, I know selling a business to a family member can be extremely difficult. You know, did you, mm-hmm. Bob, did you decide it was time to retire and first approach Joel about purchasing the company? Talk to us about your thought process that was going on.
Yeah, I think we both kind of decided at the same time. And I wanted to stay involved in the business. To help them out, we have these landing pages that we built for new clients, which are usually manufacturers or distributors or product people. And so I wanted to stay involved in that way. And Joel said, you know, let's do it. Okay. And but he kind of took over the reins. And then we decided to, you know, do a to make it a sale and make it official.
And I think a good thing to go into it was, we did the sale and we made sure that was all on the up and up because of my brother and sister. We didn't want there to be any bad blood there, as if I was given something that they weren't compensated for. So, you know, that's why we kind of went through that full sale process.
That's very important. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember, Joel, you called me probably about a year before. I guess you purchased the company and you asked me to, or you were talking to me about valuation of the company. Yep. And we went through the process and I could see where it's important to get a third party at least involved because it does, you know, take away the emotions that are involved potentially from other family members. I have a brother and sister, so I understand that very well. And so did you guys have assistance in the process from your accountants, attorneys, or business broker, anyone to assist you in the process just so you could, you know, keep it at an arm's length?
Well, what I did was I said to Joel, I said, you do the evaluation. Whatever number you come up with, it's fine with me. You do the evaluation of the business. Right. You know, and then we discussed it with the whole family, and I told them that, you know, Joel, because everybody knew Joel was involved in the business from the get-go anyway, so... Yeah. It was a natural transaction and it was something that everybody understood and is still, and everybody's good with.
Let me ask you this, Joel, for families that are going through this process and they're not as understanding as your family was, or it seemed to go as fairly smooth for you guys, but they're going through the process and they're struggling. I mean, it's causing great harm to their family relationships. Would you encourage them to bring in a third party, such as a business intermediary, their attorney, or someone to assist with the transition and become a buffer between all the parties involved?
I think it's foolhardy not to. I mean, it's one of those things where you spend a nickel and you get a dollar's worth of protection on the back end. So especially with family relationships, and there's a lot of minefields there that could come up in the future. I think it's important to make sure everybody's on the same page. And even when they say yes, to still do it the right way so that there's no hard feelings, there's no bad blood. Everybody's always going to give you smiles and hugs to your face. And even if they like you as a person, they may not be okay with something that you're doing in the business world. So it is very important to have that structure in place, I feel, because you never know what somebody's thinking on the inside, and you always want it to be honest, I think is the best word for it.
Sometimes you're too close to the situation. Perfect example, my sister's an attorney. And although she obviously can write legal documents and do everything she needs, it never hurts to have someone else or one of your colleagues look over things. Or if you were to go to court personally, you certainly don't want to represent yourself, right? And in my business, I do valuations. But I purchased a business with my brother. And when we did that, I had a second and third set of eyes take a look at things because, again, sometimes you're just too close to the situation. And when family's involved, when you're transacting amongst one another, it's that much more important because, look, businesses will come and businesses will go, but family's supposed to be there forever and has to be more important than everything.
And everybody thinks mm-hmm. that a business is worth more than it is.
You told me that. Well, so now we did the sale. Joel, you took over. How open was your dad to change? Or you mentioned earlier, you didn't really change anything, right?
No, I mean, I made a lot of changes, but the changes were all in the spirit of doing what's right for the end consumer, making it a better, more sustainable business, and providing a better service. Everything that we do is with the idea that this business is going to be around in the next 20, 30 years. So I want to make sure that the platforms that I put us on, the systems that I put in place are as flexible as our business is and as sustainable as it needs to be, as technology changes so rapidly. So the business is fairly the same. However, the way that we conduct business, the processes, the systems, those are all brand new, always getting changed. It's always process.
Well, I'm going to go off topic just for a second. So mm-hmm. you mentioned, the business can survive 20, 30 years from now. I know you have children. Any hopes that they may one day do the same thing that you did?
No, I want them to do what makes them happy. But, I think it's important that if you're fortunate enough to be in a position like I am, where, it's a family business, you have that opportunity to take over and to really kind of put your mark on it, make it your own, and continue something that was very good. Put me through private school, got my dad a Jaguar that depreciated like a rock. if you have that opportunity, you shouldn't, you shouldn't take advantage of it. You shouldn't squander it. You should see it as the opportunity that it is, and you should treat it as such. And for me, that means to build the foundation as strong as possible, because I don't know if Shale or Arden is going to take it on one day. And if they do, I want it to be something that they can build on and change the way that they see fit.
Absolutely love your answer, because in helping people buy and sell businesses all these years, one of the things I found has been in family-run businesses, sometimes the parents want to force their business onto the child, and the child has no desire to take it over. They do it just because their parents wanted to, and then it fails. I loved when you said you want your children to do what makes them happy, but hey, it could possibly be there, for them to take over and transition if that's what they want to do. So, Bob, you sold the business to your son. Oh, go ahead, Joel. Sorry.
Dad, we always joke. We can always just bring it back to sitting at the kitchen table and picking up the phone.
it could always get back. If we wake up tomorrow morning and there's no more internet, that's where we are.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to be sitting at the kitchen table in my underwear and have my phone. And right. That's fine. I think that that's really the idea behind it. Accommodates what the user needs. And if they don't want to take it over in the future, I'll run it into the ground until 90.
There you go. There's your 90. Don't you want to retire sometime?
No.
Okay. You say
that. Well, retirement age might be 90 by then.
Yeah, but really. That's true. You never know. So, Bob, let's continue on. You sold the business to your son. What were your expectations of Joel and the business going forward?
I stayed in it as much as he wanted me to, so which is great, you know. And as the technology evolved, you know, with our websites and the internet marketing, I tried to, you know, stay in and let. And he gave me these little jobs to do to just to keep me busy mostly, but also to, you know, just to maintain our trademark name. It's kind of interesting because every now and then Joel called me up and said, "You know who I spoke with? Yeah, guy that you know, you sold, you know, 30 years ago, you know, or 20 years ago, you know." And it's great when you hear things like that, because, you know, longevity is so important today, you know, in a lot of these businesses, especially in small business. It just makes it go full circle when that happens.
Joel, it sounds like you have the same experience as I do. My dad had such a great reputation in my business that his old clients, they'll call me and they'll let me know that, you know, your dad was the best. You know, you have big shoes to fill. And then it's always nice afterwards. I'll get a call from my father and he'll say, "Man, I spoke to so-and-so and they were so thrilled with you." And it makes you feel good that you could sometimes live up to your father's, to what he was able to do.
Except Joel's feet are bigger than mine. It would have to go the other way around.
All right.
Yeah, and I always raise the prices on those guys because I know how big of a pain they're going to be.
Oh, boy. So I would ask you both. You went through the process. You went through the sale. You continue on after the sale. What were the most challenging and maybe some of the most enjoyable aspects of the transition? Bob, I'll start with you.
Well, the most challenging for me was when Joel completely took over and we had to change our staff. We had a decentralized operation where we were spread out throughout the country and everybody was working in their own areas and feeding the information back to us. And then Joel reversed it. He wanted to go to a centralized operation. So that was the biggest adjustment for me, because these were people I'd worked with for many, many years, and we had to kind of part ways. And, you know, a little bit of jealousy that it was a family business now rather than just a relationship that we had business-wise with these other associates. But we did get through that, and it took about a year or two, you know, but it ended up everybody parted as friends, and I still talk to these guys, and it worked out. But you do have to go through those adjustments.
Joel, from your point of view?
It's been pretty seamless on my end. You know, the one thing that, reflecting on this, I noticed is that Dad really never told me what to do, so to say. He always gave me advice and ideas along the way, and he always had really good ideas about how to pivot and how to stay up to date, you know, ideas that we can pull back from the past that can, you know, we can remake for the future. But there's never been a iron fist. There's never been a, this is the way we do things, and, you know, we don't change this. It's always been very flexible. I think that's the nature of the business, for the most part. But it's been very easy to implement new ideas and change things and modernize. So there hasn't been too much pushback, if any.
But I want to tell you both, don't sell yourself short in this respect or this regard. You guys have a wonderful relationship, and it seems like your dad, although he'll still give you advice, it's advice and it's not the iron fist, like you said. I was involved in a transaction a number of years ago on a with a contractor, and he had sold the business to his son. And they all came into my office, mother, father, and son, one day. And the son said, "I want to sell my business." And I'm like, "Well, why do you want to sell the business?" And he looked at his father and he said, "Because although I bought the business, it's still not my business. He still comes in every day. He still makes all the decisions. And because he's financing the transaction, I have no say in it. And they're driving me nuts." And it was ruining their family. So there are times where it could be really bad. So you guys should count your blessings that it's gone as well as it has.
Well, if I'd run it into the ground, we might be having a different conversation.
Well, I know you haven't. Because let me tell you, I know, Bob, you said Joel centralized it. I'm kind of happy with that. I mean, I visited the office a couple of times, and I always leave with a nice goodie bag. So
there you go, right?
It's always an enjoyable thing. So, Joel, you know, I would go to my dad's house after I had taken over the business brokerage company, and he was, of course, always would ask me how are things going, what's going on, and then I would tell him about some deals we're working on. Then all of a sudden, he was miraculously out of retirement. oh, well, this is what you should do, and this is how you need to do it, and this is what needs to go on. He was doing it, and I always sought out his advice because I always felt like he had so much experience and so much knowledge, I'd be foolish not to listen. So when you get around the family table and dinners and stuff like that, it, you know, and you have a big decision to make or a new product you might be looking to take to market, do you still lean on your dad?
Yeah, he's more involved in the day-to-day still. You know, I don't feel that retirement is right for everybody. I think when people actually retire and don't change careers, but actually retire, I think that the brain gets mushy. So I think it's important to remain active. This is what we do for fun. You know, it's a lifestyle business. It's not a job. It's not a career. It's a business that we run and have fun with. The minute it becomes a job or a career, you know, it might change. But, you know, right now, it's fun. You know, we get to see new products every day. You know, he still gets all the product submits. I'm too busy to look at them mostly, but you know, he always sends me the crazy ones. You know, so it's fun in that regard where we're still talking about it on a day-to-day basis, but there's no big decisions to be had. There's no debates. It's just a fun kind of way to stay active and, you know, spend our days figuring things out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob, I'd like to ask you a question. The listening audience, again, those that are looking to possibly be going through this, from a parent's point of view, from the business owner's point of view, the person that's mm-hmm. started the business, run the business, own the business, and they're transitioning out, what advice would you give to individuals thinking about selling the business to their children?
Well, I think coming up with the price that everybody agrees with without arguing about it, so that's number one, of course. The valuation, and I really think the person that's taking it over has to be more in line with what the evaluation should be, and then make sure the other family members are sincerely agree with that, you know, not just say they are, but to understand that, you know, this family member is taking over the business and that's the way it's going to be. And if anybody objects to it, let's, you know, bring it out in the open then rather than a year or 2 years later.
And Joel, from your point of view, can you share your perspective on taking over the family business and give any advice to others that are looking to do the same?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to be honest about what your ideas for the future are. Have that discussion about what your plans are going to be, how you propose to change it, how you want to do that, and what role you want your family member to stay involved in. For us, it was never really a concept that dad wouldn't be involved anymore. So I think if you move forward to have those defined roles, to have the, if you need to put it down in paper, if you're that kind of a person, to put it down in paper, but you know, to have that kind of ironed out so that the expectations are managed, even though they might change, but at least you're starting off on the right foot. So that moving forward, you stop any chance of having bad blood. I think that's the biggest thing, is you don't want any bad feelings, and you want to make sure that everybody's understanding for the next steps.
Well, that's great advice from both of you. And I know the people that are listening that are going through this, I really hope that they listen to what you had to say and they really digest and take it in. So we're coming to the end of the show, and I'd like to give you the last opportunity, Joel, if you don't mind, if there's anything else you'd like to say or tell people how they can find out more information about your company.
I'm going to be hearing that you called my dad a visionary for the rest of my life. If you want to learn more about the company, it's MrCheckout.net. We have the .com also, but we kept it on the .net. Everything's online.
Bob and Joel, thank you. Thank you so much. I thank you so much for taking part in our show. And I just appreciate so much you sharing and allowing us to hear a firsthand account of what it was like selling, you know, the business from parent to child. I mean, I found it interesting to hear both points of view. So if you're out there and you own a business and you're thinking about your child taking over someday, or if you work in the family business and have dreams of taking over one day, I believe this episode is going to help you understand the process, both good and bad, what to do and what not to do, and some of the pitfalls to hopefully avoid. So I wish you the best of luck in that endeavor. I hope your story has as happy of an ending, just like Mr. Checkout has. So for more information about our show, please visit IBBA.org. Thank you for joining us today.